Tonight's shiur, Parshas Vayigash. V'lo yachol Yosef lisapik ve'itenes kolo b'vchi. Yosef couldn't hold himself back. He started crying. V'yomer Yosef elachav, ani Yosef, hod avichai. I'm your brother Yosef, is my father alive. V'lo yachlu echav lanoso soki nevu lebenav. And the brothers couldn't answer him because they were in shock. Famous Midrash brings Abba Kohen Bartel Amar, Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochecha. Woe to us for the final day of judgment, day of rebuke. Why? Yosef ktanan shel shvatim haya, v'lo yayu yecholim lamod b'tochachto. Yosef was one of the youngest of the shvatim, and the brothers couldn't withstand his rebuke. V'kashiyavo HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yochiyach kol echad v'echad, lefi mashu, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give everybody mussar, alachas kama v'kama. So, different perishim, what was the mussar? So, he'd like to suggest that the mussar Yosef was giving him, as it says right after that, Ani Yosef achichem asher machartem osi mitzrayma. I'm your brother Yosef, that you sold me to Mitzrayim. He was telling him, just think of what you did, right? You took your brother, your younger brother, you sold him into slavery for 22 years. So you say, okay, but you know, but look what we got out of it. So what did you get out of it? Pasuk says in the famous Pasuk in Amos, right? Al mikram b'kesef tzadik ve'evyon bavur na'alayim. They got some shoes. You sold your brother for shoes? I mean, how could you do such a thing? I mean, So, mele lo yachlu echav lanosot. The brothers didn't know what to say. It's true, they sold their brother some pairs of shoes. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say the same thing. He's going to say to us, you sold me. You did away with me. For what? Okay, I could see something chasha, but what? For shoes. For gashmias, whatever. You put me aside. Right? You had time to learn Torah, whatever, instead of taking advantage of it and do things for me. What'd you do? You go ahead and do your own thing and run after money, etc. And after shoes. It's a story with the son of the Chafetz Chaim built a house next to the Chafetz Chaim's little, if you want to call it a house, maybe a shack, whatever. And his son built next to him a house. So they invited the father, Chafetz Chaim, to his house for the Chanukah Sabbath. So he comes into the house, he looks around, he goes up to the walls, and he like caresses the walls. The wall had wallpaper on it. It was in style in those days. All right, wallpaper. So he touches the wallpaper, and so he kisses his hand. He says, the first time I saw a house that has pages of Gemara on the walls. You know, it's adorned with pages of Gemara. So they're looking at him. Pages of Gemara? What's he talking about? This wallpaper. What's? So he explained to them. He said, you don't understand. He says, wallpaper costs money. Okay, it costs money. Now, money, how do you get money? You have to work. Work takes time, right? So comes out that in that time that you know you could have you're working to make money to put on the wallpaper, you could have been learning Dapim HaGemara. So you gave up the Dapim HaGemara and then put on wallpaper. So this is wallpaper. This is a trade-off for Dapim HaGemara. That's Asher Machar Timuti. Similarly, the Ponovitcherov said he had a similar experience with the Chafetz Chaim. He was when he was in the yeshiva, the Chafetz Chaim's yeshiva is learning with Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in the Kol HaKodshim. So they came across a certain sugya, whatever, and there was a source was quoted a certain sefer, and it was a rare sefer. It wasn't in the Beis Medrash, but they wanted to see it inside. You know, see the sources inside. So the Ponovitcherov said, "Hey, I know the Chafetz Chaim in his Likutei Halachas brings the sound the sefer down quite a bit, so I'm sure he has it. So I'll go and borrow it from him." So he goes to Chafetz Chaim and he says, "Yes, I'm looking for this in the sefer." So the Chafetz Chaim says, "Oh, yeah, it's a very rare sefer, yeah, and it's very, very sefer indeed." So the Ponovitcherov said to him, "So can I borrow it?" So he goes, "Well, I don't have it." He says, "You don't have it?" He said, "No, when I was working on it, the sugya, whatever, I borrowed it from somebody who had it, and then I returned it, so I don't have it." He says, "But Rebbe, you spent a lot of time on this subject. It must have been, you know, it must have been a very long time." He says, "That's right." So he says, "So why didn't you just go out and buy it already? Okay, I can see you needed it once, you know, but you quote it so many times, you needed it for a long time. Why don't you just go out and buy it?" So Rabbi Chaim says, "Buy it? Because it costs money." He says, "But Rebbe, you always taught us that what's money? You know, money's not chashuv." He says, well, excuse me, he says, money. He says, how do you get money? You have to work, right? And in order to get money, you have to work. And work takes time. And time, that time, you can be learning Torah. So I try to minimize the amount of time I have to work to make money, and therefore much I don't have to spend the money, I don't have to work, and I can be learning in that time. Similarly, he says that the Panavritcher Rav says he was once visiting America, and he heard there's a saying that very people like to say there in America, and that is, what time is money. So meaning what? That the ikar by them is money. And time is measured in relationship to the money. So time is money. He says, but Lamaisa, we hold, we saw from the Chafetz Chaim, the opposite true. Not time is money, but money is time. In other words, the ikar is time. And the less you have to, make money, the more time you have. And the more time you have, the more time you have to learn. So money is time, not time is money. Finally, once the Chafetz Chaim was visiting again his son's house, and he noticed his daughter-in-law, she opened this drawer, and it was full of shoes. Oh, different kinds of shoes. So he made a comment. He says, it used to be that the people used to put the emphasis on the head. He says, now they put the emphasis on the shoes, on the feet. He says, it used to be that the head was the drawer that was full of Torah, Mishnah, Gemara, Bavli, Yerushalmi. But now, unfortunately, the drawer is not the head anymore. The drawer is the drawer filled with the shoes. Things have changed. Okay, he brings here another idea, which is a famous idea, which he elaborates on. That when the brothers, they came to with Binyamin, right, to Yosef. And Yosef asked them, "Yishalahem l'shalom, v'yomer shalom avichem azakein asher martem odchai, odenu chai." Yosef asked them before they knew he was Yosef, right? Is this how's your father? Is he still alive? And they said, "Yeah, shalom l'abdachavinu, he's alive, odenu chai, v'ktod v'iktu v'shtachu." When they bowed down, okay. So Yosef again asked, "Is the father alive? 100%, he's alive, good, okay." Then they ate and etc. And then he sent them off. And then with the Gavia, and it was hidden in Binyamin's thing, and then they went after them and caught them and brought them back, whatever. And so what happens? So the Yehuda, after Binyamin is taken, so Yehuda says, okay, he's supposed to be taken as a slave. So Yehuda says, okay, that's it. And that's the beginning of this week's Seder, Yigash Alav Yehuda, and he starts up. And what's his main taina? He says, you can't take Binyamin, right? We're going to be in big trouble. What's the trouble? He says, Vayaki rotoki ena nar v'meid. He says, my poor father, nafsho k'shur v'nafsho, if I'm going to come home and say, sorry, Binyamin's gone, our poor father's going to die. Ki eche le'al aviv anar enenu iti. How can I go back to my father and without this son, Binyamin? Pene rabba ra, asher yimtza, es aviv, and what's going to be? So then Yosef says, oh, he couldn't hold himself back. Lisa Pei, he cried out, we saw before, and he said, Ani Yosef Aod Avichai. So it says, it's not understood. What's going on over here? Aod Avichai, why is he asking if the father's still alive? He knows the father's still alive. The first thing when they came down, with Binyamin, he said, the first thing he asked, knew what's the story, the father alive? And they said, yeah, our father's alive. They couldn't have gotten any more information. They didn't have emails in those days. That was it. And then he sent them off, brought them back, and they never went back to the father again. So why is he asking them again? They knew. They already told them that the father's alive. That's number one. And not only that, Yehuda's whole attack? He says, you can't take Binyamin. Why? Because he's going to kill our father. Meaning, father's alive. Father's dead. They don't have to kill him anymore. So he was his whole soliloquy over here. Oh, you can't take him because our father's going to die. And it shows that the father was alive. So why is he also saying Aod Avichai? So he brings the famous answer of the Beis Halevi that he says that he wasn't asking the father. He knew the father is alive, but what he was asking was rhetorically. He says, excuse me, right, what are you saying? Oh, our poor father, what's going to be, you know, we care about our poor father, and if you take Benjamin, he's going to die. He says, you care about your father? What about when you sold me? Then all of a sudden, no, then you didn't care about your father. Make up your mind. It's a stira, right? Here you're saying, our poor father, you care about him, so when you sold me, you didn't care about him. So that's what he's saying. Ani Yosef, Hoda Vichai, how come our father still be alive? According to your girsa, that he cares so much about his son, he'll die if he found out his son was ill. So then he, right, he should be dead also when you sold me, right? Then there you didn't care about your father, right? But now you know, all of a sudden you care about your father. A stira. Mele, he says, that's the shot in the midrash that we brought in the last piece, that's the tochacha, that Hashem's going to say, that tell us that we're full of stiras. You know, for example, you know, a person going to say, oh, he says, how come you didn't give tzedakah? Well, I have a lot of expenses, I couldn't, I have this, I have that, and I didn't have money, I would have given, my pasha didn't have any money. Hashem going to say, you didn't have money? Oh, you had not money to go to the theater, you had not money to buy a new car, a new house, that you had money for. When it comes to giving tzedakah, all of a sudden you don't have money. Like he says by children, he says that that the kids are always late for school, right? Every day, chronically comes late for school. But when there's a tuyul, yeah, he's there on time, right? So, you can't get, it's sleep in, I can't get up. Oh, when there's a tuyul, no problem getting up for a trip. That you're okay with. That's the, I remember once there was a bacher here in the yeshiva that he also was trouble getting up, and he had a flight, you know, early in the morning. So what happened? He slept in and he missed his flight. So I said, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem, why? Because otherwise you should get up a tiny in your shemayim. Oh, you have to get up to go to the base medrash. That you're too tired. But to go to your flight, to go, oh, that you get up nice and early for, right? So this way, no tiny is in shemayim. So no, I didn't get up for that either. Fact is, brings a nice maisa. But in Branovich, there were two mashkichim. They were a Gedolei Torah. One of them was Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchinsky, and the other one, he was the chassan of the Sabamina Vardach, and Rabbi Yitzhak Waldershain. Anyway, so they were, once they had to travel, they're one of the chashav Bacharim and Yeshiva were getting married in another town or whatever, so they had the Bacharim or whatever, and the Mashkikim, they were going to go to the chasana. So they were supposed to catch the afternoon train, which many of them did, but these two Mashkikim, they missed the train, and so they had to take the next train. The next train was at 2 a.m., 2 o'clock in the night. So, fine, so the... So Rav Yitzchak, one of the Mishkichim, so he went to Rav Yaakov Yisrael's house about, you know, around midnight, whatever, 1 o'clock, in order to go with him to the train. So he knocks on his door and he says, are you ready to go? So he hears from the other side of the door, Rav Yaakov Yisrael says, no, I changed my plans. I decided, no, I'm not going. I'm not going. Just send my regards to the chassan or whatever. I'm not going. He says, okay. So Rav Yitzchak, goes himself, and he's the whole time he's saying it's very strange, because he never changes his plans. He is always exactly what he says he does. So what is he doing changing his plans over here? She says, you know what? He must not be well. He must be sick. That's why otherwise it can't be. So the whole time he was worried about him, what's going to be with him. Anyway, so finally he finished the one chasana, whatever, he came back. And the next morning he went straight to his house, to see how he is. Imagine Yaakov Yisrael's house. So he went to the house, knocked on the door, his wife answered. He says, is Yaakov Yisrael here? He says, no. He says, where is he? He's in the base medrash. He says, oh, Baruch Hashem, you mean he's better? She says, what do you mean better? Well, I was in sick? She goes, no, it's fine. He says, that's strange. So he goes to the base medrash, right now he's saying they're learning. So he says, you're okay? He goes, yeah, I'm perfectly fine. Why? He says, oh, I assumed you were sick because you never changed your plans. And last night you changed your plan. I picked you up at 1 o'clock to go to the train in the morning and you didn't, you said you couldn't go. I thought for sure you were sick. He says, no, I didn't change my plans. That's, normally I don't change my plans and I wasn't sick. But I'll tell you what happened, right? Every night around midnight or so, I close my gemara and I make my way to sleep, go to bed. Why? Because you should learn at night or whatever, but... I say to myself, but I need my strength. I have to rest. I can't stay up. I'm tired. This whatever. So every night I go to bed around 12, right? And then all of a sudden, you come pick me up and go to the train station like at 1 o'clock in the morning. Take the 2 o'clock train or whatever. So I figured, what am I going to say in Shemayim? right? You can say I'm Talur, but to go, you're like, on the train at 1 o'clock in the morning, take a 2 o'clock train, huh? That all of a sudden you're not tired, right? So I said, I won't have to answer that in Shemayim. That's what I said. Okay, I'll pass on this one. You can go yourself. It's a cute joke, but it brings out the same point over here. It says there was a group of men that they're always sitting around and schmoozing and drinking, and as they wasted their lives away, because it's a group of... So one day they were schmoozing. They said, you know, who knows what's going to be, you know, in the next world or whatever. Maybe we should... So they made a deal. They said, whoever is going to die first, he's going to come to the others in a dream, whatever, and tell them what's doing over there in the next world. So we should get an idea what's happening. Fine. So sure enough, wasn't a long time later, one of them had a problem with his liver or whatever, from drinking so much, and he went to the next world. So sure enough, he comes to them in a dream, and he's totally black. He's like a frill of charcoal or whatever. He says, what happened? What's happened with you? He says, well, I ended up in Gehinnom. You know, he says, oh, you mean that we have to change our ways? He says, no. He says, you're fine. It's okay. Just, you can go ahead. Just keep it up. Do whatever you're on. Keep drinking. Just stray away from whiskey and you'll be okay. So I said, what are you talking about? So he goes, I'll tell you what happened. I came to the next world, right? So they start asking me questions. He said, did you learn Torah? Whatever. I said, no, I didn't learn Torah. So you didn't learn Torah. He says, why didn't you care about what's going to be in the future, in the next world, or whatever? So I told him, I'm not that with next world. I don't care about the future. I don't think about that. I'm not a future guy. I care about the here and the now. And therefore, here and now, have a good time, schmooze, drink, whatever. So he says, you drank? Well, they asked me, what did you drink? What did you drink? So he says, all kinds of things, wine and liquor and arak and whiskey, you know. So they said, wait a second. I said, okay, wine, I understand, you know, wine is tasty, liquor is also nice, is sweet, and arak, they said, also has an, you know, interesting taste to whatever. But whiskey, ugh. He says, how can you drink whiskey? It's bitter, it's like, ew. He says, how do you drink whiskey? So I answered him. He said, what do you guys know about drinking whiskey? He goes, he said, you're right, you drink it, it's like, you know, it's a little bit bitter or whatever. He says, but you don't realize that afterwards, you get, has such a wonderful effect on you, and a warming effect afterwards. It's something that, they said, so in other words, when you drink it, it doesn't taste good. But later, you're drinking it because of the later effect. So what are you, you only care about the here and now. He says, you don't care just for the here and now. Haraya, you drink whiskey because of what it's going to be later on. So just like that, you have no excuse why you didn't learn Torah, what's been later on. You care, that's fine about the later on. So he said, therefore he came back to the guy. He says, so that's the story. So therefore I told you, you can continue drinking and everything, just don't drink whiskey. If you drink whiskey, they're going to catch you on that one. He didn't understand. It's not the whiskey, it's the steer in the door. So he says also, you know, a person saves up, you know, puts aside for his Karen, pensia, they call it, you know, his pension fund, you know, put money aside, what's going to be, what they'll have, what to have, and then the last 30 years of his life, whatever, that we'll live on, etc. That's very nice. He said, but, you know, you're going to be asked, why not, you know, put aside the money for tzedaka, what you'll have for eternity, you know, putting for everything for here, and what, you know, what's going to be, you have to think of what's going to be in the future, and that's going to be a time. Another famous story brings also this same lesson. Story with Rabbi Yisrael Misalant. He was once on his travels. He ended up in some small town, and he went to this a Jew that was you know, he had a little inn, whatever. So he went there to stay. So the innkeeper runs up to him and says, oh, a rabbi, you know, he figures a rabbi, long beard, you know. So the rabbi goes, oh, rabbi, he says, oh, tell me something, do you know how to shecht by any chance? So Rabbi Yisrael says, yeah. He goes, oh, great. So can you shecht for me? Because we're having guests and the shochet's supposed to come today, but he got something happening, he's only coming tomorrow, and I need the stuff shechted now, whatever. So can you shecht for me? So he says, yeah, it's not a problem. He goes, oh, great, thank you, rabbi. So then Rabbi Yisrael came up to the guy and he says, oh, by the way, you know, I made a cheshbon, you know, and I need some money from to travel back. I miscalculated. I need like 10 rubles in order to, you know, traveling money to get back. So would you be able to lend me 10 rubles? And as soon as I get home, I'll mail it back to you, you know, as soon as I get home. So he said, listen, I don't know. He says, what's wrong? He goes, 10 rubles is quite a lot of money. And he says, yeah, but I'll give it back to you. He says, yeah, but Jew says, I don't really know you. You know, I don't know you. It's the first time I met you. And so he says, okay, at least 5 rubles. He goes, listen, 5 rubles is still, 5 rubles is still. If you want a couple of pennies, okay, but like 5 rubles is still. So Rabbi Israel took out his wallet. He opened it up and he says, As you can see over here, I have more than 5 and 10 and 20 rubles. I have plenty of money. He says, I was just testing you, right? When it comes to shechting, oh, Rabbi, can you shech me? Here's a shiloh of nevelis and trefus if you don't know what you're doing, and lifneiver, all kinds of averas, right? And then, you're obviously a trustworthy guy, you know? Oh, I trust everybody. That's just the way I am. Yeah, when it comes to that, when it comes to a loan of 10 rubles, all of a sudden, oh, I don't know who you are, whatever. Let's steer a Shabbat. The Gemara says in Baba Basra, Tetzayin Amud Aleph, Bara Kadosh Baruch Hu Yetzer Hara, Bara Lo Torah Tavli. So the Mesil Shesharim in Perakei says that, in famous Mesil Shesharim, that if the Chazal tell us that the antidote for the Yetzer Hara is a Torah, it must be that's it. It didn't say there's a number of things. It says this is the antidote. You know, the only thing that we can really can fight the Yetzer Hara is the Torah. If you don't have a Torah, you don't have a fighting chance. So therefore, he says that being the case, the situation where the chance of the Yetzer Hara is greater, so you need to be immunized more, right? You need the antidote. You need to be inoculated against it. The more the danger, the more the Yetzer Hara, meaning, for example, he said, Bein Hazmanim. You know, Bachur is approaching Bein Hazmanim, but he's not just sitting in a Beis Medrash all day, so there's the Yetzer Hara out there. Much more Yetzer Hara. So much more Yetzer Hara, you have to get a lot of the immunization, the Torah. So really, he says it should be that towards the end of Zman, that's the time when the Bachrim should be, you know, really getting into their Torah learning, because they need that inoculation before they go out there for Bein Zman. So unfortunately, that's not always the case. They kind of, you know, get weaker as the Zman goes along. But he says, a classic example, where we see that by Yaakov Avinu, right? He knew he was going to Laban's house, which was, you know, Makom, that was fraught with dangers inside and out. So what did he do? Went to learn 14 years. Shem Vayimer, on his way. Stop off 14 years of learning. Why? Well, he had to really get a good booster shot, you know, Torah, when he's going out now to out into the world. So Mimela, with this, back to our Parsha, we can understand why when Yaakov Avinu was, again, after he, you know, met Yosef, whatever, and he knew he was going to go down to Mitzrayim. So the Torah tells us, "Ves Yehuda shalach lefanav al Yosef lahoras lefanav Goshna." That he sent Yehuda ahead. Excuse me, he sent Yehuda ahead, right, to Goshen. Says Rashi to start a yeshiva there. Sent him ahead of everybody to open up a yeshiva. Because he knew this is Erev Vasaaretz. Your Mitzrayim is a place of the Merkava Lasitra Achra. The Rikanti says it's a place of Mamash, the place of the Yetzer Hara of the Satan, and therefore you need an inoculation. So therefore, first thing, sends Yehuda ahead in order to open the yeshiva for that reason. He says that Chidush Yerim's famous words. He says that the world is backwards. Why? So the Gemara says in Nida and Tetzayin on a base that before a person is born, it's a nigzar whether he's going to be rich or poor, right? It's already nigzar before he's born. What's going to be with him? It's going to be rich guy, going to be rich or poor. But tzaddik or rasha, it's not nigzar, right? Because that's in kol bidei shemayim chutz miyur shemayim, right? That's in a person's hands. Whatever, that's up to him if he's going to be a tzaddik or rasha. But rich or poor, that Hashem. So he says, the world's backwards. Why? Here we have parents. What do they care about? They care about, oh, make sure there's your kids have a proper parnasa and learn a parnasa. And that which is nigzar, nothing you can do about it anyway, and it's all set. It's going to be before a person's born. It's already nigzar. That is, oh, I have to care. But when it comes to Torah and learning Torah, whatever, that's like, ah, be upset or whatever. That's up to a person. So that, you need the inoculation. That's what you give your kids. That's the important thing. That's up to them. And therefore, you have to train them in the right way. Parnasa, Kosh Baruch Hu is already nigzar. He's going to give it anyways. Brings a famous, a beautiful story of the Ridbaz. Ridbaz was Rafal Yaakov David ben Zev, hence Ridbaz. And he's a mechaber, a famous Pirush on the Yerushalmi, and he was a Rav in Slotsk. Anyways, when he was an older man already, came in Aliyah, Teres Yisrael, is living in Sfas. And the story goes that once he had a yard site for his father, and he went to the shul, and he was standing there by the Yamud, in the morning, whatever, and in thought, standing there ready before davening, and he started crying. So the people came in and said, Rebbe, okay, it's your yortzeit, we thought you were thinking about your father, maybe whatever, but Rebbe, your father died maybe like 50 years ago, it's not exactly like, it's like a long time, and Velas Yeshana, why are you so, choked up about this? So he said, let me tell you something. He says, I got up this morning, to come to shul, and it's a storm, as you know, it's a stormy, it's a very stormy day outside. It's cold and rainy and whatever. And I'm an old man, I'm a weak man or whatever. So my first reaction thought was, I'll try to get a minion together here in the house, and I'll dive in over here because it's very hard for me to go. He said, but then I thought about my father and what he did for me, and then once I thought about that, I said, I gotta go to shul. Why? So he says, when I was a kid, I was a little boy, and we were very poor. My father, his job was, he used to make furnaces. He used to take those days made out of bricks. They make bricks, and there was an oven that people used to heat the house and to cook on and everything. It was all-purpose oven. And my father used to make these ovens. So one year there was a shortage of bricks. And shortage of bricks, meaning he couldn't build ovens, no bricks, no ovens. So we were really, it was really tough year. And my father had hired a malamed, his name was Chaim Sender, and used to pay him 1 ruble a month to teach me, to tutor me. So 1 month went by, 2 months went by, 3 months went by, and he didn't get paid because we Pasha didn't have money. So he sends a note back with me, and he says, listen, I'm sorry, it's been like 3 months. If you don't pay me by tomorrow, I'm going to have to stop learning with your son. So my father saw that. He said he was broken completely. He goes, what? I'm not going to learn with my son. He asked him. Okay, he didn't know, but what was he going to do? Was he going to come up with his money? So anyway, my father went to shul for minchamar, whatever. And in shul, he overhears this wealthy man talking. And he says to this chevra there, and shul, he says, I got a big problem. He says, this is a wealthy guy, and his son just got engaged, and he bought him a house. In those days, they're made out of wood, wood house, whatever. And he says, but there's no furnace, and it's cold, going to be a cold winter they're expecting now, and and he's not going to have a furnace, because there's no bricks. So he said, I'd be willing to pay 6 rubles, to have a, if I could only have a furnace, whatever. So my father heard this. He says, you'll pay 6 rubles? He says, yeah. He says, okay, tomorrow morning you'll have yourself a oven. He says, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, oh, wonderful. So what happened? My father came home and he started to get to work at our oven. And he started breaking up our oven. And piece by piece, brick by brick, and he cleaned it off, took all the cement off or whatever. He took worked the whole night, breaking apart our oven, taking the bricks, and the next morning he brought it to the rich man's, the house he was building, whatever. He built the oven there, and he gave him the 6 rubles. So he came back home, he says, called me over, and he says, here, take this to the Malamed. And tell them 3 rubles are for the past 3 months, and the other 3 rubles are for the coming 3 months, a down payment. And you can stay learn with them. So he said that you have no idea how freezing we were that winter. It was a freezing cold winter, and we had no oven. And we were covering ourselves with blankets. We were dying, and it was freezing cold. He said, but that's what my father did, just so I should have a good Torah education. So he said, you know, here I was, you know, it was cold outside. Should I go to the shul for my father's yahrzeit, you know, or should I go? You know, I was thinking, how could I do the least I owe my father? I mean, what he did, he froze it, and just so I should have a Torah education. And how can I stay in this more warm house and daven over here? So that's why I came to shul, and that's what I was thinking about. And then that's why I'm crying. Okay, I'll be zoicha to remember all the what's right and what's good and what we should put our emphasis on. We should make sure that the Yom HaTochecha, we shouldn't be nivhalu like the brothers of Yosef and full of stiras, and we should be careful to do the right thing always and invest in the right places. And we should zoicha to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimhir B'Yameinu.